Thank you so much. I am very grateful to the Pipes Lecture Committee for extending to me this invitation to speak again here in the church. I want to thank especially Diana Spears, Pat McGuire, Ray Goodman, Rob Briner, who was a former chair of the Pipes Lecture Committee, Bob Dietz for helping us with the audio-visual, and the Reverend Greg Ward for extending such a gracious welcome back to the UU Community Church of Santa Monica, and of course to the Reverend Ernie Pipes, in whom the spirit of this lecture will always reside. And I'm very, very happy to be part of it. And finally, I want to thank my husband, David Denton, since he was coming with me on this adventure back to Santa Monica, I asked him if he would collaborate with me on the program and provide some visual imagery to go with my talk. So it's not going to happen while I'm speaking, but he'd be happy to, you know, show you his photos again afterwards if you want. They were all from downtown Knoxville, where we live. What a challenging assignment I have had preparing a message for today. Sifting through the anxiety, anger, and fear that have become part of our daily lives this past year. Wondering as I wake up each morning what new outrage or lie would be visited upon us, I have moved uncomfortably between seeking distraction and making witness. Thinking about what to say and not just another dinner table rant has required me to focus my uneasiness and salvage some meaning from the mess we are in. Where I started is with this tradition in honor of the ministry of the Reverend Ernie Pipes, who served this congregation for 35 years, followed by more than 25 years of active retirement as minister emeritus. During these later years, he continued to exemplify the values that characterized his leadership, the qualities of character that he lent to this community and made it better because he was here. Two qualities stand out among Ernie's many virtues and endearing attributes: critical thinking and civility. Ernie has been exemplary in his capacity for critical thinking, his method in the search for truth. His sermons were an education in fact-based exploration, made lively by his adventurous intellect and made relevant by his keen social conscience, nurtured by his relationship with Maggie, his wife. But anyone who knows Ernie understands that despite his commitment to truth, he always delivered his message, whether from the pulpit or in the pastor's study, with civility. Not only is Ernie unfailingly polite, but he is generously tolerant of everyone. Yes, every one of us. That civility is the outer form of the inner state of compassion. It is something we treasure in him and miss in contemporary life, as we cringe while our public leaders debase their office and abuse our country. Critical thinking and civility, values for discourse worthy of democracy. Like most of you, I imagine, I have spent this past year searching for a way to live with the very difficult truth of our country's political situation. Like many of you, I have gone to demonstrations and fought the despair with resistance. But unlike you, I live in a red state, Tennessee. My representatives fairly consistently vote against my idea of a just and compassionate society. And in fact, most of the people in my state seem to have voted that way themselves. Most days, however, I have very little contact with these red state voters and their politicians. I live in the small, walkable, historic downtown of a pleasant city, Knoxville, home of the University of Tennessee. As I go about my daily activities, I see preservation, revitalization, and growth and exciting spaces transformed by makers and new urbanist visionaries. We share a liberal political sensibility and a progressive mayor, and if we choose, we can buffer ourselves from those who are different, much as you can do here in Santa Monica, most of the time. We also have Confederate monuments in Knoxville, and the cannons on the old City Hall lawn that face north, as they seem to in every southern town, and the occasional vehicle rolling by waving a rebel flag, all reminders of the very real divisions we cannot ignore. As a Yankee who moved to Tennessee from California, my permanent outsider status has allowed me to observe Southern ways with some perspective. But as someone who has made her home there, I have also had to learn how to make conversation, make friends, make a life. I am married to a native Knoxvillian, but I needed to find my own community, separate from the relatives, high school classmates, and memories that make that place home for David. That search has brought me to some new realizations about where I find my people. Those of you who know me will not be surprised that these realizations often occurred to me while walking our dog, Aki. As long ago as 2001, when I walked the streets of Sunset Park with him, pondering the catastrophic events of September 11th, and wondering where to turn for hope, I learned that one place I could find it was on those walks, in the encounters with neighbors and strangers, in the public space we all share. Now Aki has lived his life, in his last couple of years, still confident, but increasingly frail. He became something of a spectacle as I often pushed him around in a dog stroller, determined to make life as pleasant for him as I could. None of this effort went unnoticed by the people we met in our Knoxville public space, a well-loved city park and an open plaza called Market Square. It is a special place, recognized by the American Planning Association as one of the great public spaces in America. Like the Santa Monica Beach or the Third Street Promenade, public space is a major asset to the community. Knoxville's Market Square is where the people of my neighborhood go to walk their dogs, take a break from work, or meet a friend for a meal. Some sleep there day and night. Some days it becomes the site for a festival or a wedding, and twice a week, the farmer's market. I probably walk through that space 5 or 6 times a day. It is impossible not to find out who else is there, especially with the famously loquacious nature of the people. Knoxville is not the Deep South. It is Southern Appalachia. The city folks just a generation or two removed from hollers and farms, not plantations. But they have picked up the outgoing style of the South, where no one is a stranger, even if you want them to be. Not long ago, I was pushing Aki's stroller up a steep hill just outside the square when a bus pulled up next to the curb, came to a stop, and while riders patiently sat, the driver pulled down his window and said to me, "I've been driving this bus for 3.5 years, and I see you every day. I just wanted to know, how old is that dog?" "17, I answered, as I did probably a dozen times every day, and he moved back out into traffic. The curiosity and speculation about Aki started a couple years ago as he started showing his age. "That dog's a goner," said one of the homeless men who live in the park. "He irritated me, this old guy, pretty much a goner himself, with his mansplaining about my dog and rattling me about his inevitable demise." "Oh, he's doing better than you think," I said. 2 years later, I would still see him and wave. "We're not gone yet," I thought, "but soon." The public space is a place for truth. Somehow out of the contact and the friction, the essence of our condition, no matter who we are, leads us to knowledge we need. Together we practice a collective form of critical thinking, brought to us by our encounter with each other and the differences between. If there is anything that will save humanity from ourselves, we will find it together in the public space. In the months after last year's election, we became aware of new differences in our household. David became obsessed with the news. He paced from computer to television, restlessly monitoring each development, as if seeing and hearing it would restore a lost sense of control. Every announcement was a blow to our sensibilities, but I became exhausted by my reactions and refused to allow my entire psyche to be consumed by this rolling disaster. By January, I found myself consumed by something else. The entire first season of the Lemony Snicket Show, the gloomy children's story, a series of unfortunate events. This is how I felt about the election. What better anthem for my spirit than the show's theme song? Look away, look away, look away, look away. The show will wreck your evening, your whole life, and your day. Every single episode is nothing but dismay. So look away, look away, look away. This is exactly what I wanted to do. And that was the tension that hovered over us. Look all the time or look away. We eventually settled somewhere in the middle. And as citizens turned activists and resistors, we have each learned both how to get the news and stay maladjusted, as Dr. King once wisely advised. Our beloved public square has now become a place to seek sanity and tell the truth as we turn to it over and over again for demonstrations and vigils. Encountering the differences among us as we go about life in Knoxville has led to other hard truths too. I don't know how to talk to the security consultant who was working in our building recently. First of all, he has such a thick East Tennessee accent. I really can't understand what he is saying. Considering our language barrier, I was taken aback by the words on the T-shirt he was wearing. Welcome to America. Now speak English. There may well be no common ground for us other than the public space where we both rightfully belong. Some differences may be so great and the distance between us so vast that the best we can do is stand in a public space together and not say anything. In times of distress and fear, we seek like-minded people and friends, safe places where we can be ourselves. The day after the election, I felt the need to go somewhere safe to share my grief. I ended up at Yassin's Falafel House. Yassin Teru is a Syrian refugee. He moved to Knoxville in 2011 and started out selling falafels at his mosque. Then he rented a storefront a block away from our home and sold falafels every morning until they ran out. I was one of his first customers. 2 years later, the falafel shop is thriving. Yassin is opening a second restaurant in the suburbs. His success has even caught the attention of the national media, including CNN. Yassin is not only successful, he is generous. When Knoxville became home for evacuees from Hurricane Irma recently, Yassin gave them free falafels. He knows what it is like to be a refugee, hungry, and short on cash. During the presidential campaign, which gave rise to troubling rhetoric about immigration, a Muslim ban, and other hateful pronouncements, I worried that Yassin would think that he and his family were not welcome in Knoxville. In fact, he later said that the morning after the election, he and his wife discussed whether they should even open the shop that day. They did, and 100 or more of his customers and neighbors also showed up, ostensibly to reassure Yassin that we loved him and welcomed him and his family. But we also came to reassure ourselves. I started weeping as soon as I got there, and so did others. And then Yassin came out from behind the counter and said to us, "It will be all right." I don't know whether it will be all right or not, but hearing those words from Yassin gave me strength. This is the comfort we crave when we fear that all that lies ahead is a downward spiral. We huddle together and protect each other. We make a safe place together. But that safety is fragile, even in communities of like-minded neighbors and friends. And in religious sanctuaries, alienation and division can surface within the group or attack from the outside. It hurts to encounter difference in a place of refuge because we expect to think alike and get along, and when we don't, we feel betrayed. David and I now belong to Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church, which has its own story of alienation and betrayal. In 2008, a man entered the sanctuary one Sunday during an intergenerational service and fired a shotgun at the congregation. He killed 2 and injured 6 others before church members tackled him to the ground. According to the gunman's confession, he came to the church to kill liberals and Democrats. This horrific episode changed the church in many ways. Some of the people who were in the sanctuary that morning never returned. Others renewed their commitment and stayed. And all of us, even those who weren't there at the time, have to consider the risk of being there now. The tragedy elicited great care and compassion from the larger community. The church next door, Second Presbyterian, where David reluctantly attended services with his family as a child, offered immediate shelter and first aid. People of all faiths found common ground by giving comfort. That common ground has led to a stronger interfaith community, ready to advocate for each other in times of vulnerability, building resilience and tolerance together. The illusion of a safe place, a sanctuary for like-minded people to know each other, has shattered, though. Yes, there is comfort in coming together, as we did at Yassin's Falafel House the morning after the election. But the complacent version of community where everyone is somehow alike, or thinks alike, or acts the way we expect them to, is no longer sustainable. Not there in Knoxville and not here in Santa Monica either. Perhaps what we need now is something that works like public space. A place where everyone has the right to gather peacefully, mindful of our differences, and willing to tolerate, if not learn from them. As I have spent so many hours strolling through our public square with Aki, I've observed differences of opinion manifested in slogans on T-shirts and flags, religious speeches, guns in holsters, all of which I have been reluctant to engage, despite how talkative and friendly everyone is, at least outwardly. We are so deeply divided, I don't know where to begin. And yet there are other differences which are even more painful to witness, that require every one of us to begin somewhere. I am speaking of the widened disparity between rich and poor, the growing catastrophe of economic injustice that is killing people every day, and someday will kill our society. In my community in Knoxville, just like here in Santa Monica, you cannot walk far from your home before encountering someone who has no home, no medicine, very little to eat, and a few people to care. We can look away, but not for long, because they are everywhere. In my public square, those who suffer have names and stories that everyone can learn if they wish. It's a small enough place. That can happen. I've done that because my dog always attracted attention, and I've talked to everyone who approached us. Now I know them. A month ago after Aki died, I walked the square and told each of his friends, the homeless people we talked to every day, and told them that he was gone. They grieved with me. There is a collective equalizing that happens in public, even while we witness the great injustices that make life so cruel for so many. This is where I place my hope that we will make the corrections we all need to survive. It may be too late for some corrections, as the impact of economic injustice, climate change, and paucity of honesty, generosity, and compassion take their toll. One environmental activist, Tim DeChristopher, who has already served 2 years in federal prison for civil disobedience, offered this timely, though despairing, insight. "The question for me is starting to shift now," he said, "from how do we reverse climate change to how do we remain human as these changes overtake us." He is now exploring that question in divinity school. How do we remain human as the consequences of our greed and short-sightedness widen the gap between us? I confess there have been times in the past year when I had no idea how to answer this question. It helps me to remember the values I associate with Ernie's ministry, critical thinking and civility, which are really ways of being in the world that seek truth and tolerance and support democracy. Whether in the public square or the sanctuary, these values suggest how we can begin to make a safe space, the common ground on which all humans can stand together, a place to remember what it means to be human. A couple weeks ago, after yet another pronouncement about immigration, David and I attended a rally in Market Square sponsored by the Tennessee Immigrants and Refugee Rights Coalition. It was a small turnout, as a federal judge had already blocked the order, but the people were there all the same. We heard speeches from a young Muslim mother who was born and raised in Knoxville, from another young woman who had just arrived in Knoxville after living in a refugee camp in Uganda for 20 years, and from Yasin, our Syrian refugee turned entrepreneur. I quickly became irritated, however. A man on a bicycle waving an American flag was circling our group, yelling, "Love trumps hate," but in a hostile, heckling way. At the same time, a car alarm kept going off, perhaps on purpose, making it difficult to hear the speeches. I was still feeling raw from my grief over the loss of Aki, and my anger rose with each interruption. The man on the bicycle swerved closer to the group. He shouted, "I haven't been able to find a job for 2 years." "Of course not," I thought. But Yasin Teru called back to him, "I'll give you a job. Come to my shop, Yasin's Falafel House." The tension eased. The man stopped circling. And once again, Yasin made our place safe again. People, we are up against major forces aligned to diminish our humanity. As we witness the environmental disaster that threatens to envelop us, the suffering of people caused by injustice in all its forms, the distressed connection between us and creation, it is tempting to give up, look away, or turn inward. We all need a respite from reality these days. But even if I thought there was nothing we could do about reality, I would still want to remember what it means to be human, and to nurture the qualities within that teach us how to seek the truth and help one another. When my despair is too great to carry by myself, I go to the public square. I go where people gather for reasons as disparate and individual as we truly are, because every time I do, something about being together on common ground brings hope that we can still make corrections and save us from ourselves. And with that hope, you and I will remain human. Thank you.